This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning and welcome to the 6 a.m. stretch on The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Condison, and with me in studio this morning, Noelle Lim. How are you doing, Noelle?
I'm good. That's because two more days to the weekend.
That seems like our consistent benchmark for how good the day is. Proximity to the weekend, except for Monday, because you would have just come off the weekend. So not the best feeling there, the Monday blues. Anyway, we've got a great show lined up for all of you today. After 6:30 a.m. news, we'll be talking about jargon and whether jargon is really necessary in the working or the professional world. You know, we've talked about buzzwords before, so we'll see what you all have to think about that. Noelle, what else do we have today?
Well, we have something called the wellness kit. So I'm very interested to know what's in your wellness kit. As for me, it's quite an interesting article here. So I think we're going to be exploring more of that.
And after this, what's the most important thing of the day for you? Well, for a lot of us, it's how we start our mornings. And normally, I think for me, I have a very consistent morning routine that follows the first three or four things. But we've got an article here that's talking about maybe the best way to start your day to maximize or be the most productive in the world is by being inconsistent with your morning routine. I know it sounds counterproductive. Noelle, we'll be discussing that in just a little bit. And before all that, you can always let us know what you think over on Twitter at BFM Radio or over on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Is an inconsistent morning routine the way forward? Let us know what you think. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. You tune in to The Morning Run with Roshan and Noelle. And that was All Star by Smash Mouth. And I don't know about you, Noelle, but whenever I hear that song, the first thing that comes into my head is a green monster, Shrek.
Yeah, so it's a very cheerful song, right? And sometimes I do forget that it is the Shrek movie song, because it's such a, you know, it just makes you so happy.
Yeah, it does. It always puts a smile on my face. And, you know, I have to wonder whether Shrek has a morning routine. I think he does, right? The movie shows him waking up and then having a mud
bath.
Brushing
his teeth.
Yeah, something like that. But more importantly, Noelle, what's your morning routine like?
Well, my morning routine really, you know, once I think I open my eyes, I kind of like just do a quick tuning in about maybe less than a minute. And then I'm up and go and I'm up and, you know, brushing my teeth and so forth and just getting on with my to-do list. So I'm quite consistent in that sense. And so when you picked this article, I was like, oh, this is very counterintuitive.
Yeah, basically, the premise here is that you don't do the same exact routine every morning. Maybe you have the first three that are the same. But what you do is you block it into categories of, let's say it's personal growth, and maybe you've got different things you do. So you can do journaling, or you could literally just stare out of a window, but you've set 20 minutes for personal growth and you've got a few things to work in. It's kind of like a wardrobe, really. You've got a few choices for each category. And it's interesting because what I think, when I first looked at it, I was a bit dubious because I was like, does this really work? But what you could still do is maybe the first three things that get you started stay the same. But after that, you can reprioritize based on the day that you have. So let's say the first three things I do are wake up, make my bed and brush my teeth and shower, of course. Then the rest of it can be, okay, I sit down for 15 minutes to prioritize my day. And maybe the next two habits optimize for that, which is actually quite an interesting premise.
So this article, the consistency is the first 20 minutes. That's what I understand. But the inconsistency is what you do in that 20 minutes. But it does, he does suggest that you focus a lot on yourself, right? Like what you want to do and then, you know, doing all that categorizing. I think for me is I do my to-do list the evening before. So when the morning starts, I'm just out there and just executing on that list, really. So I find that that has really worked for me over the years, and maybe that's why it just works, because it's consistent, right? But maybe in the weekend, it's worth trying something different.
Yeah, I think a good way to think about this, it's modular. It's a modular morning routine, essentially. And you plug and play things that you think best suit the day. So in your case, Noelle, if you were doing your to-do list the night before, you could be like, okay, for tomorrow morning, I'm going to do journaling and I'm going to hit the gym, and then I'm going to go off to work, because maybe you've got a freer morning that day. But there are some days where you can't hit the gym because you've got that early morning meeting, which can be very annoying if you are the type of person who likes getting a workout in the morning.
Yeah, so I think due to the nature of our work and we have to be here so early, you know, that 20 minutes is quite a luxury, right? Yeah, but so maybe the weekend is possible. And there's also another thing, I work much better and I do my thinking time actually outside the office. Mm. And I think it's got to do with the fact when you're in the office, there's always, your mind is always thinking, is someone going to come and touch me on my shoulder and want to speak to me? So I find it much easier just doing it outside the office, the deep thinking. Also, I initially used to think it was our open office plan that made me like a bit uncomfortable, doing this kind of thinking. But I realized it's about being around people that you know and the possibility of they wanting to come and speak to you. Because I'm fine doing that deep thinking in, say, Starbucks with a bunch of strangers around me.
Yeah, because no one's actually going to come up and bother you with something else. And I think there's something nice about being in a crowded cafe and doing that sort of thinking, because all that noise or that background sound gives a bit of like a white noise feel. You feel connected with the world, yet you are not actually connected to anything else. And it can be quite peaceful if there are no irregular loud sounds like clanking and things like that. But just the buzz and the chatter of life can be quite nice. There's also the whole thing about mindset, right? Because when I enter the office, I'm not deep thinking about anything. I'm not thinking about anything else. It's pure work. And it's the conditioning that I've preset for myself.
Yeah, so you just want to get into action, right?
Correct. And when I get home, I don't want to do work because I've preset that as well. So sometimes when you have to do either one, like you have to switch the venues, it can be a bit, it can cause some dissonance.
Yeah, so I found working in libraries very good. And because we have a Taman Tun library just down the road of where we work, and that has been quite a conducive place for me.
Yeah, we've got actually quite a few comments coming in, and we've got Boon, who said that what he does every morning is he just spends 5 minutes stretching, doing downward dog, and a bit of yoga in the morning, which is a great way to see. Sometimes when we think about working out in the morning, you think you got to go hit the gym for half an hour, but sometimes just a simple wake up and stretch or move can be enough to set you up for the day.
Yes, stretching is really good. I mean, I think it really lifts the mood.
Yes, and of course, there are people who just love running. I think there are a few BFM listeners in the morning who tweet into us all the time or WhatsApp in, who go running at 6 a.m. and listen to us. So if you're listening right now, have a good run.
Yeah.
Yeah, but morning routines are essential, because I personally feel if I don't get my morning routine in, it completely just hijacks the entire day. It feels off step, you know?
Yeah, I think the main thing is to how it sets you up for the day.
All right. And let us know what you think. What's part of your morning routine? Do you think this Fast Company article about an inconsistent morning routine would be better than the consistent one you do every day? Let us know what you think over on Twitter at BFM Radio or over WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Up next, we're going to be talking about what you would want in a wellness kit and define that however you would like that to be defined. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're tuned into the Morning Run with Roshan and Noel, and that was Everlasting Light by The Black Keys. And now I have a question for you, Noel, or for everyone who's listening. What would you want in a wellness kit? Because, you know, we've seen quite the dawn of the wellness, let's call it the industrial complex for fun, and everyone is getting in on this business. Apparently, it's worth billions of dollars. But there are some studies that are showing that all these new mobile health apps and fitness apps don't exactly hit the mark when it comes to these things. Sometimes it can add, in fact, a bit more anxiety in your life, having to check these boxes off and do this and do that. So these guys over here, these guys in this Fast Company article, started a subscription box service called Made For. And it's basically a completely analog experience, where it's a subscription service that just sends you a box full of physical stuff, things like notebooks, like hourglasses and things like that, to make you, to help you in your own wellness journey. And each of these things are supposed to help you think about a different part of health, whether it's sleep or drinking enough water or simple journaling.
Yeah, so there is like some of the things that they could provide is a science guidebook, for example, how to sleep better, and maybe some notebooks to jot down your thoughts on this. So I think the kit is called Made For. What is in your wellness kit? For me, I'm very low cost, right? Very low maintenance. So I really have just 3 items if I were to assemble them. It's really my notebook to scribble down notes, mainly to what to do next and all that. And then my exercise clothes, you know, you kind of keep it simple, right? Just put it in a box or something. And then my mala beads, I mean, I think that's always very comforting. And I guess now, in recent times, because of the COVID-19, it's good to have a hand sanitizer in there and a face mask.
Like a scout, Noel, always prepared there.
Yes, and, girl guide.
Girl guide, yes. And I know, I don't really, I agree. I don't really need a subscription box every month with a different thing. In fact, I think that would make my life more confusing. I have very simple, if I had a wellness kit, it'd be simple. It would be my notebook. Right now, I quite like the checked box Muji ones. And I also have a particular pen that I like using, which is a Pilot Uni Gel, a Wing Gel, sorry.
Is this the same one that Tun Mahathir uses?
I don't know what Tun Mahathir uses. I should find out. But yes, notebook, pen, headphones, not even to listen to music, but just to cancel things out. And a gym membership would be great. Working out and chucking your phone away for 45 minutes to an hour can be an amazing breath of fresh air. And last but not least, coffee. I do like having my coffee while I'm doing things like writing things down or note. Or, you know, we were talking earlier about morning routines. Back in the day when we didn't have to wake up at 4 a.m., I used to wake up in the morning and have my coffee in the garden while thinking or listening to music or writing things down. So that was kind of the wellness kit. Now you've had to adapt. Now it's 10 a.m. when we're done at the studio, I head to the gym and get away for a little bit.
Sometimes I wonder, is it a wellness kit or is it a survival kit?
Yes, a sanity kit maybe. Yeah, you know, these are things that, you know, everyone now is getting in on this. There are always different, there are always business opportunities wherever there are, whenever there's a demand. And a lot of times we are talking about people burning out and we're talking about stress. And a lot of it really does seem to stem from this little device that we hold in our hands and keep in our pockets and our handbags, supposedly more powerful than the computer that sent astronaut to the moon. So powerful, in effect, that it's overloading our brains a lot of the time or just keeping us constantly activated.
Yeah, so I was actually going to say, in addition to all these physical items, right, that makes you feel good because you get to touch them, you get to write on your notebook, for example. But I guess there's also a case for digital apps, right, because sometimes it just helps you track your health, for example, your sleep patterns. That's one thing. But, you know, when I read this article, I couldn't help but think to myself, I wouldn't mind being a shopper. For this business, right? You know, I shop for people.
Yeah.
But I'm not spending my money. I'm actually shopping. I think that itself would be quite therapeutic.
That's a great opportunity. That would be a great experience. I wonder if they're looking for people to help them with that.
I could work part time for this, right?
Maybe we could start one in Malaysia, Noel. You and me. We'll start a wellness kit. I don't know what we're going to call it, but we'll call it the sanity kit for Malaysians.
Yes, I think we should, you know, just get all our other colleagues in the team to also get involved.
Yes, and we have the experience to know what we would possibly demand. But, you know, as much as it's easy to criticize the digital world and apps and all, sometimes it's also our use of it. I have actually personally found some apps very useful in keeping certain habits that keep me sane going. Things like I have a habit tracker called Strides, and I have an intermittent fasting tracker called Zero, which help to regulate things so I don't think about it, right? I put it aside. It doesn't occupy any cognitive space in my brain, and it helps to at least keep things going. And, you know, health trackers, like I have an Apple Watch, help to at least, you know, it's nice to keep track of the activity that you do. It gives you a certain sense of accomplishment. The problem is if that certain sense of accomplishment becomes neurotic and you like, oh no, I didn't go to the gym, I'm not going to hit that 500 points that I got, then that becomes counterintuitive.
Yeah, so I think it's all about moderation and balance.
Yes, and you know, when it comes to moderation and balance, another thing that we should be taking a look at is actually jargon at the workplace. Is it really at all necessary? Well, let us know what you think, because we'll be taking a look at this after the 6:30 a.m. news. You can let us know over on Twitter at BFM Radio or over WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. To take you to the news, we have Stuck in the Middle with You by Steeler Wheels. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're tuned into The Morning Run with Roshan and Noel, and that was Viva La Vida by Coldplay itself. We're taking a look at, you know, 6 a.m., the 6 a.m. stretch takes a look at the lighter side of business. And you know what's light? What's on the lighter side of business, Noel? Talking about jargon, business jargon. Do we hate it? Do we love it? Do we really need it? It's something that I think we've tackled this before, but it was more on the lines of buzzwords in the workplace. But, you know, sometimes jargon is necessary in the professional working world.
Yeah, so I think it helps simplify communication, especially if you're talking to peers and you've used these jargons before. And of course, on the downside, it might, you know, it might be an attempt to make ourselves look smarter than, you know, who we are. But, you know, what are your favorite jargons, right? So, you know, like paradigm shift. when I first heard that, I'm like, what? And then there is like cautiously optimistic, but you don't hear that now so often because most people are just cautious, full stop. And there's this risk on, risk off, you know, so all these kind of jargons. And I have to say, you know, of course, BFM presenters like to use them. But it can be irritating to some people. But on the other hand, I think, you know, many do appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, but it does... It's very pointed, right? It's very efficient. Like if I say something like stakeholders, it immediately you know what that means if you're familiar with the language, because then I don't have to say, oh, to the people who are affected by this decision, I just go, the stakeholders involved. It's two words. Or like we're talking about risk on, risk off. There's a very specific meaning to that. And it suits a very particular theme or climate in a tone that comes with that word. It's very similar to if you are very used to working in the office or at home. It sets a mood when you use this different language. And it really does feel like that. When you turn on, like when you work on mode, you use these terms to signify that you are at work. But that aside, these things do have meaning. But then you have things like paradigm shift and reaching out, which on the side of buzzwords and can get annoying if you hear it 7,432 times.
Yeah, so, and what is the history of these jargons, right? I think they came out from business schools, you know, people coming out from these schools with MBAs, and maybe they came from consulting firms like McKinsey and the Boston Consulting Group. I guess it's one way for them to justify their phenomenal fees. But, you know, the downside about jargon is that maybe it stops us from thinking. Like, you know, especially like for in our trade, we have to write scripts, right? And sometimes we have to stop and think, like, are we getting carried away? Have we lost the art of writing? Mm-hmm. Like trying to convey complex concepts to you know, trying to break them down for a radio listener who's driving typically and may not have time to comprehend so many words, and you have to keep some words really simple and yeah, so it did make me think like whether we would lose the art of proper communication, writing, speaking if we, you know, rely on jargons.
There is always that risk that when you do get into the fluid speaking of a certain set of jargon, say a personal finance. So we have Ringgit and Sense every Thursday, and there is a balance between using the regular jargon and breaking it down for everyone who's listening, because it's you also want to teach people that these are the words that are used in this world, right? If you go into a bank, these are the words that you need to expect. No one's going to be there to break it down for you. So bridging that gap is important, and getting... learning these words are important because it's not going to go anywhere. And in fact, you know, Noel, you're talking about how this came out at MBA schools. I think one of the stories was that in the 80s, when military leaders or people were adopting military terms in the corporate world to make it sound more, I don't know, efficient and effective.
Or more serious.
More serious. But also things like target acquisition and things like that. These are all very military-esque terms that have come in. But over time, they do mean very specific things. And while they can be overused, and I'm sure there are many people who overuse them. They are not unimportant. They have it allows you to effectively speak to something in an efficient manner. And maybe I used a bit of jargon and buzzwords in there as well to communicate that across. But let us know what you think. Is jargon really necessary in the working world or in any world for that matter? Do we overuse it? And you know, what's your favorite or least favorite jargon? Let us know what you think over at BFM Radio on Twitter or on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Up next, we'll be taking a look at the papers and the headlines. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you tuned in to The Morning Run with Roshan and Noel. And that was Uptown Top Ranking by Althea and Donna. And we're taking a look at the papers right now. And Noel, anything popping up to you in the papers right now?
Well, the obvious one will be second wave of the COVID-19 situation. So 11 days went by without any new COVID-19 cases, according to the New Straits Times. And so from February 27 onwards, however, the situation changed very dramatically, actually, with patient number 26 at the centre of most of the infections. And patient number 26 is the UDA chairman. I think he attended a major event. I think there were a lot of people there. And so now 14 new cases have been linked to him. I mean, clearly he's a high profile profile executive. And so, therefore, you know, he has been described, the health ministry has described patient number 26 as a super spreader. But it cannot be helped, right? I mean, life has to go on, business has to go on. And I suppose, so I guess now it's about really taking precautions.
Yes, in related to the COVID-19, we've got a headline here over a Malaysian reserve that Malaysia Airlines Berhad has cut over 600 flights and has received over 180,000 cancellations in relation to the COVID-19 outbreak. I think this just underlines the impact it's had to the tourism industry. Just lucky for Malaysia, we're not as exposed to tourism as countries like Thailand, for instance. We're a bit more balanced when it comes to that. But it is an impact to the travel overall, and who knows how long it's going to take to recover, because right now I think it's also a lot of fear in that sense. Should you travel, should you not? What is the likelihood that you may or may not come into contact with someone? But I guess the important thing to remember is always just to practice good hygiene. I think that's the PSAs going out by the health ministry. Wash your hands, you know, don't just use water, use soap, 20 seconds, rinse them properly, use sanitizer wherever you can. And wherever, as much as possible, don't touch your face with your hands, especially if you haven't washed it in a while. So it's just important to keep note of good hygiene in this time, and do whatever you can to keep clean. I've got the Metro in front of me, and in the top right-hand corner, they're speculating over who could be the Deputy Prime Minister candidate, and they've put either Mat Hasan or Hishamuddin there, which is an interesting conversation, because right now you've got a government of four big factions, really. UMNO, Bersatu, GPS and PAS. And Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin is going to have his hands full trying to balance it out, because again, his party doesn't have the majority. I think that belongs to UMNO, but it's arguably said that GPS is really what is giving them strength at this point, because of the 18 seats that they've provided. I mean, they could swing over to whoever really gives them the best outcome for their state, because when it comes to East Malaysia politics, it really is about what they get overall.
I feel that there could be three scenarios here that Tan Sri Muhyiddin may be looking at. One, maybe to give to create actually a DPM2 position, so you could give that to a Sarawakian MP. That's one. And then another option would be, so I'm interested to know whether he's going to be thinking long term, because long term, who is going to be his successor? It's always good to have a succession plan in mind. And so I think it would be interesting to see who his candidate is. But the third option could very well be just someone he can work very closely with, someone that you know, he gets along with. So and that could be someone from UMNO or Bersatu.
Yes, this is actually quite interesting, and we'll be taking a look at this a bit deeper later at 7:45 with Professor James Chin, who will be talking about GPS's role in the new government and what they're likely to want in terms of maybe in terms of politics, in terms from the new government. So that'll be an interesting conversation. So tune in at about 7:45 for that. Another thing that's going to be interesting to watch is seating of MPs in the House when Dewan Rakyat resumes in May 18th. It's been postponed now to May 18th because I think there's a bit of where are you going to sit, everyone? Who's going to be on the opposition side? Who's going to be on the government side? That is something to be watched. And the opposition, however, is asking for a special sitting to determine the support for the new prime minister. They understand, I think, that yes, you need time to prepare and you need the time to set your cabinet, but maybe do a special sitting. I think Ram Krapal was asking for this, to just show that you have support in parliament before we go through all of this other procedure, which is maybe not an unreasonable thing to ask, but I guess it comes down to whether Tan Sri Muhyiddin thinks he has the numbers in the House before he goes there. And we're going to be taking a look at the markets in just a little bit with Vishnu Varathan of Mizuho Bank. We saw markets in the US bounce after the US primaries happened, as Joe Biden showed that he has what it takes maybe to be the Democratic presidential nominee. To take you there, we've got right after this, we've got the 7 a.m. news, and to take you there, Till I Hear It From You by Gin Blossom. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.